Continuing then with the 13th question and answer on page 472, Christ, the ideal truth, in the margin, presented preeminently by Jesus, line 12, comes to heal sickness and sin, and therefore death, of course, through Christian Science, on the basis that nothing apart from, that is, fallen away from, God is present or has power. Jesus, says the text on line 15, is the human man. Christ is the divine idea. Hence the duality of Jesus the Christ. Just the way this was taught in the platform, wasn't it? All there is to Jesus is Christ. All there is to the human is the divine. And so Jesus, line 18, introduced the teaching and practice of Christianity, affording proof of Christianity's truth and love, uncapitalized. That's the human appearing, then, of divine truth and love, proving that the sole reality of humanity is its divinity. So that in this case, God, the divine principle love, takes the place of the personality of the human man, Jesus. Jesus' acts proved his words. He proved what he taught. Such was the science of Christianity, whereby life, truth, and love destroys all error, evil, disease, and death, so proving humanly the principle's divinity. That's what has to happen. Proving humanly the principle's divinity. Well, this is the way it was done in the early Christian era with Jesus, line 4, and this is the way it must be done, of course, in the case of Christian Science today. It's not really a matter of destruction, we see from the text, but of fulfillment. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill, line 20. The destruction of sin, sickness, and death by life, truth, and love, line 16, is not really the destruction of sin, sickness, death, because there isn't any to destroy. What looks like sin, sickness, and death being destroyed is really life, truth, and love being fulfilled. In this way, Christ, line 30, destroys the works of the devil. In just the same way that light destroys darkness, proving no night there. Top of 475, only the light of truth itself. All is truth. Infinity is spirit. Divine principle and its idea, no matter. All there is to matter is therefore principle's idea. All there is to the human Jesus is Christ, the divine idea. And therefore, in that case, we can begin to answer the question and answer number 14, what is man? What is true in the case of Jesus has to be proved true for mankind. Man is not matter. Man is idea. Man is not made up of the material elements of brain, blood, bones, etc. He's made of God. He's made of the spiritual elements of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. He's idea, the image of love. He's not physique. 475.14. Being the idea of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, he is indeed the compound idea of God, compounded of all that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love is, and therefore including all right ideas. Reflecting God, he reflects himself in God. That's to say, he reflects all the ideas that make up God's image and likeness. 9:16. Reflecting this unity of God and man, he is the conscious identity of being as found in science. Having God for his mind and having no separate mind of his own, possessing in fact nothing of his own, but reflecting spiritually all that belongs to mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. It's the self-reflection, isn't it, of the us, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, that makes him God's own image. Let us make man in our image. That's what gives him dominion over all the earth, reflecting God's dominion over himself, the whole's dominion over all the parts that make up the whole. Man has dominion over himself, over his own body, his own constitution. And because he possesses nothing of his own, he cannot depart from holiness. Only depart from holiness if you possess something of your own. Therefore, he's incapable of sin, sickness, and death. Lines 28-29. So it's all a matter of distinguishing between mortals and immortals, between God's children, line 28, and the children of men, who are the children of the wicked one, or the one evil, conceived in sin and brought forth in iniquity. Not for one moment must we believe that mortals are fallen children of God. 2 times 2 equals 4 never for an instant gets itself changed into 2 times 2 equals 5, which has then got to be changed back into 2 times 2 equals 4 again. Mortals never had, says the text on line 15, a perfect state of being which may subsequently be regained. So, clearly there are not two kinds of man, one mortal, the other mortal, immortal. It's all a question of taking the correct or incorrect view of man. Jesus beheld God's man standing there in exactly the same place where mortals behold sinning mortal man. Jesus's correct view of the only man there is heals the sick, the text says. And therefore, man is spiritual, not a material body inhabited by God's soul. It's true that the kingdom of truth and love reign in the real man. But this is because man reflects God inhabiting his own body or kingdom. But God's soul reigns in this way throughout his own embodiment. Very different proposition from soul inhabiting a mortal body. The body of soul is found within soul, not vice versa. And that's why we've arrived so naturally at the truth about soul and body. So, accordingly, question and answer 15 asks the question, what are body and soul? Well, clearly, the answer lies, according to the text, in understanding what identity is. Page 477, 920. Identity is the reflection in the singular of spirit at the same time as being the reflection in multifarious forms in the plural of the living principle love. This identity of singular and plural conceived of spiritually, or as we had it before, the one and the all constitutes the truth about body. Man's substance, life, and intelligence. There in the text, the same order as we had at the beginning of the second group of six questions and answers, isn't it? Man's substance, life, intelligence is soul individualized, but not in matter. And man is thus the expression of soul. He reflects, in this lovely symbolism, the smile of spirit, because soul reflects only spirit, never matter. Well, a smile is that which appears, doesn't it, as the expression on a face, that is to say, on the surface of identity, and reveals what's going on beneath the surface or in the depths of identity. Using this lovely symbolism, man is the smile on the face of God, reflecting the underlying reality of soul, spirit, God himself, from which that expression is inseparable, because it's soul, spirit expressing itself, soul, spirit doing the smiling. Either without the other would lose their entity, but together they constitute identity. Remember how Jacob said, having seen God face to face, so that his life was preserved. I see the face of my brother man as the very face of God. Because body, man dwells in soul, God. Soul, God by reflection dwells in body, man. Whereas man as mortal body is, as far as soul is concerned, a vacant domicile. The marginal heading, so let's make sure that there's no one at home in a mortal body. That's to say, now, in accordance with question and answer 16, let it not be believed that brain thinks, that nerves feel, and that there's intelligence in matter. Let it not be believed, that is to say, that body is mortal. On the contrary, body is the intelligent functioning of mind. 478.23. And so, in this 16th question and answer, what we are concerned with is mind and the functions of mind's own body, the only body there really is. In which case, the discharge of the natural functions, line 19, of what appears as the mortal sense of body, are harmonious and just go on unnoticed. Now this is so when, in the words of Paul in Galatians, 9:27, we cease to confer with flesh and blood. Just let that go on unnoticed. But are called instead by God's grace. That is to say, when we are separated divinely from the belief of ever having originated in an organic maternal womb. When Eve rejoiced, I have gotten a man, and that was Cain, from the Lord, this was a lie. That which is mortal does not come from God. As it said in question and answer 14, the need is to distinguish between the children of men, which are the children of the wicked one, and God's children. But even so, I have gotten a man from the Lord is undoubtedly the rejoicing of the woman in the apocalypse when she brings forth her man-child, isn't it? Her son, the son of man, is indeed the son of the living God. As Paul says in that same quote from Galatians, to be called by his grace is for his, God's son, to be revealed in me. That implies that matter as matter has no sense, no senses, no sensation. Matter cannot see, feel, hear, taste, or smell, line 10. It has no self. Its supposed selfhood, in line 13, is mortal mind. Does that which we call dead, that's mortal mind, having supposedly departed from it, ever see, hear, feel or use any of the physical senses? 9:15. No. God alone creates the heaven and the earth, creates man inseparable from himself. But if, however, there is ignorance of this, if there is darkness regarding the face of the deep, regarding that which underlies the surface of consciousness, then earth is apparently without form and void. There is seemingly no smile, no expression on the face of God. As we had it in the previous question and answer, no spiritual reflection. 9:5, page 480. Only the darkness of vacuity, and not a trace, no reflection, no facsimile of heavenly tints, only colorless black. 9:27, none of the divine hues of the prismatic spectrum of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. No white light of the 7 days of creation whereby to understand the wedlock, the unity of God and man. But when the maternal rejoicing is according to that of Mary with regard to Jesus, or the woman in the Apocalypse with regard to her man-child, then it is understood that there are not two creations, one human and one divine, but that the two are one in identity. And therefore, that coming down to line 30, the invisible things of God, the underlying, below the surface reality, are understood by the things that appear reflected on the surface. So clear that from Jesus' words, if we think about it, he that hath seen me, as it were the smile on the face, on the surface, hath seen the Father himself. Well, in that case, body is certainly not mortal. That which says it is mortal, namely a supposedly thinking brain, supposedly sentient nerves, is a liar. The supposititious parent of evil, 9:24 and 4:80, is a lie. Nerves are devoid of sensation. Being devoid of sense, mortal body, material earth, is without form. Without form and void, devoid of sense. All sensation, all functions are those of mind, the origin of the revelation of science, which is man, the Christ body, in accordance with the Christianity emphasis of this third group of six questions and answers. Man is not God, and God is not man. 9:20. No. Man is qualitative, his reflection only, whereas God is both quantity and quality. God is both God and man. When Mary and the woman, in contrast to Eve, rightly rejoice that they have gotten a man from the Lord, this is because they know that on line 27, God, the divine Word, makes all things. And without this Word, this self-reflection as to what I, God, am, namely mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, without that, nothing is made. See, Mary and the woman are therefore like the archpriests of yore. Line 5:481. They have entered into the holiest. They've entered into self-conscious communion with God. That's how Atonement and Eucharist put it. With no separating veil of the temple. Time, tempus, temple, body mortal. No veil in between man and God. That which is born to them, therefore, is their own true being as man. Organically birthless, organically deathless, that which is being born to us is our own true being as inorganic, birthless, deathless man. Idea is being born of principle. They're not partaking, and we mustn't be partaking of the forbidden fruit on line 16 of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of mortality or death, but partaking of the tree of life, the science, a self-knowledge of mind. Their understanding, and we must be understanding, spirit to the exclusion of matter. Spirit, line 7. Their soul, which is God, is sinless, sexless, therefore self-sustaining, not self-destroying. They've lost not a sinful soul. They've lost the sense of sin. So the text is teaching here. And of course, the same with us. Only the sinlessness of our one soul, our wonderful soul, God, can give us the true idea of what we are as this soul's own sinless, deathless body. The opposite of material sensations or soul as an evil and good intelligence resident in matter. Well, question and answer 17 over on page 482. Is it important to understand these explanations in order to heal the sick? Well, it jolly well must be, surely. Yes, the understanding of them is the way. The one and only Christ way. The way of truth, little t. casting out not some, but all error, all sinful breakaway from God. You see, Jesus, whom Mary rejoiced to get from the Lord, was the Son of Man, because he was the son not of the male Joseph, as we have it in the text here, but of the woman's self-conscious intercourse, communion with God. Whereby he was the Son of Man, capitalized. Nowhere else in the literature, except in the special instance of the court case at the end of the practice chapter, is man capitalized in this way. Now, what's the significance of it? The significance, surely, is that of principle's uncapitalized idea appearing in the form of the capitalized word Christ, Christianity, science. The very subjective being of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, and as such the holy matrix, foursquare city. The spiritual identity of the human race as a whole. The very God body, the God embodiment called by Paul, the mother of us all. No wonder the Son of Man is the Son of the living God. Now, what wise men on line 23, and notice the capital W. What wise men we are to let angels whisper these things today to our spiritually hungry hearts, instead of listening to the whispering, talking serpent, or supposedly sentient nerves telling us that man is a creator. We are simply obeying the moral and spiritual demands of science. There on line 9, in order that there be true, in the marginal heading, transcendent healing. Healing that has transcended, that has climbed above, that is above all the methods of drugs, hygiene, and animal magnetism. 483.1. So what has happened is that Christianity, line 14, has appeared in its science. Corporeal sense, the way Eve identified the serpent, you remember, is shown to be error, simply error, or the supposed breakaway from truth, and mind to be the substance of everything. Well, in the cases of Christ Jesus, line 20, and what are called the ancient worthies, the accent may well have been on the spirit, the Christian, or Christianity, part of Christian science, but not so today. That which has appeared today is the science of Christianity, the science part of Christian science, the absolute letter, which in balance with the absolute spirit fully constitutes Christian Science. Even so, what we are basically concerned with, the text points out, is Christianity, but in its science, whereby its letter and spirit are one. So that we're really standing all the time on that foundational platform at the end of the science of being, adjacent horizontally, as we've seen to this present chapter recapitulation. The result is the system of the science of mind honoring God. Line 25, as no other system in the world, no systems of the ordinary scientific schools does. What it involves is being unselfish, free from dissimulation or pretense. 484.2, it means reaching the absolute science, the absolute letter of Christianity, whereby Christianity is based on a divine principle, which is unerring, or in the words of the platform, infallible, unfallible. This is Christianity, emphasized by this third group of six questions and answers, founded on the rock Christ. Line 5. This rock or stone being signified in the gospel by the recognition on the part of Peter that the Son of Man, Son of woman, generic man, is the Son of the living God, so that the two are one in identity. Upon this unfragmentable rock I will build my church, my body, the human race. There's a diversity in unity of spiritual individuality, spiritual individualities that are synonymous in their relationships one with another, Jesus implied, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. In other words, in question and answer 18, metaphysical or Christian Science healing does not include within it any one of the following six mindless methods. Now on page 484, line 13 in the marginal heading, the mindless methods of medication, material hygiene, mesmerism, hypnotism, theosophy, spiritualism. You see, medication involving the conscious dispensing of material drugs in obedience to so-called health laws or hygiene, befooling reason mesmerically by putting mortals hypnotically to sleep in the so-called psychic unconscious, where all the amalgamations and admixtures of theosophy originate, and causing them to believe that they're personal mediums through whom spirit speaks spiritualistically. None of those have anything to do with metaphysical or Christian Science healing. The material laws of natural science, as objective states of mortal mind on line 13, involved in all these mindless methods, yield in divine science, where the human and the divine are one, to the law of one God mind. That the objective physical universe, line 13, expresses the conscious and unconscious, the voluntary and involuntary thoughts of mortals, and the action of error in all its forms. Of course, that takes our thought back, doesn't it, to the very basic teachings of the practice chapter. While drugs and inert matter are unconscious, mindless, line 17, subjective mortal mind and objective physical force are not two but one. And what we are confronted with in all these contradictory, dualistic illusions is simply a matter, on line 20, of false education. In contrast to true education in divine science, which puts an end to the hypotheses involved in all false theories and practices. We're coming then to the end of the third group of six questions and answers. We reach the fourth and last group, where science is accentuated. And the evidence of this, as we glance through these six, is the text's insistence on science instead of the corporeal senses, on understanding instead of belief, all directed to the end purpose of swallowing up death in life. So, to the 19th question and answer, is materiality the concomitant, that is to say, does it accompany spirituality? And is material sense a necessary preliminary to the understanding and expression of spirit? Well, the answer obviously is no, because error is not necessary to reveal truth. Science is pure, not dualistic. Spirituality in the question itself is the understanding and expression of spirit, and therefore it's free from what the text a little lower down there, line 26, calls foreign agents. Error is only ephemeral. It's transient. In the first marginal heading, it lasts but a day, that is to say, 24 hours of time, which may well signify that it's destroyed by the 24 questions and answers, so that in the unfoldment of the seven timeless days of creation in the next chapter, it simply doesn't exist. Well, it's in this that we see the way of emerging gently from matter into spirit, line 14, without material sense being a necessary preliminary or a concomitant to the understanding and expression of spirit. Tremendously important, that, isn't it? See, gently. It's like the word generic and genesis, from the root gen, to be born. In accordance with the unfoldment of the 7 days of creation, determined as these are by the word of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, we shall come naturally into spirit through better health and morals, and as the result of spiritual growth, without getting mixed up with matter or death in the process. Why? Because the process is that of scientific translation, in the marginal heading. First taught in the Science, Theology, Medicine chapter for the purpose of making atonement and Eucharist the science of everyone's being. And that really means to say that it's the teachings of recapitulation which are the impulsion at work right across that entire horizontal line of chapters, making translation possible. What has to yield are the heathen gods, line 28, of the mythological, psychological unconscious, seeming to control war and agriculture, and as being basically identical with the nerves and muscles of the mortal body, involuntarily controlling sensation and strength. Not really two things at all. When it's all resolved metaphysically. So in the marginal heading, on line 6, sense versus soul. Suppose every corporeal sense of the body had been quenched by some accident or other. Dying doesn't restore these senses. But spiritual understanding and spiritual sense does, says the text. But in the form of immortal consciousness. Line 9. Because this is the corporeal senses, scientific translation, and the process by which, now this wonderful statement on line 9, Earth's preparatory school is improved to the utmost, that is, to the uttermost. Proving all the way until the improvement is so great that it has been proved that there's no death. Just as Jesus proved, line 14, by the prints of the nails, that his body was identically the same immediately after death as before. In other words, he proved that man's sight and hearing, etc., are in fact spiritual senses and not material at all. Their reality and immortality being in spirit and understanding and not in matter, they're permanent and cannot be lost. We understand God not through the medium of five corporeal senses. If we did, and we lost these senses, we'd be in a terrible situation, says the text, for we would be without God. Well, the conclusion on 487.3 is that life, which is deathless, is our origin and ultimate. Like Jesus, we come forth from life and return to it, and in so doing, we walk in the pathway of truth untouched by death. Coming from life, returning to life, we walk in the pathway of truth untouched by death. We are at work in Christianity, seeing and hearing spiritually instead of materially, and we are at work in science, perpetually exercising instead of losing the faculties of our true God mind. And in this way, understanding puts an end to belief. And therefore, the 20th question and answer on page 487 comes, you speak of belief, who or what is it that believes? Well, if spirit is all-knowing, if mind is all understanding, and if the body as matter is incapable of believing, and if mind is not mortal but immortal, then believer and belief are one and the same thing, namely neither of them exist. And the text refers to the epistle of James. Now we remember, don't we, how Paul, in his epistles, had bidden the people to leave the old standpoint, the Old Testament standpoint of works, getting things done, not really the Old Testament, but it's really between the two Testaments, the standpoint of works, getting things done on a material, human basis, and advance instead to faith, or the understanding of Spirit God. But the writers of the epistles that begin with James said, yes, that's fine, that's right, but faith without works is dead. It would be just like the letter without the Spirit. Therefore, James says, as quoted here, show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. I'll show you that the understanding of life, spirit, lengthens our days. That is to say, that such understanding outpictures itself as works. Faith in, the understanding of principle, makes whole the diseased. Line 31, this is works. Can't really be the one without the other. The results, the works of our teachings of understanding, faith, are their sufficient confirmation. Up there on line 2, to banish a severe malady, on the strength of these instructions, well, that's for works to be the outcome of understanding or faith. And they are, in fact, the proof, the very proof, that the teaching is understood. So as that question and answer comes to an end, the text shows us how, through translation from the English language back into the original Hebrew and Greek languages, symbolizing, no doubt, translation from the language of matter back into the language, the original language of spirit, belief becomes faith, understanding, trust, constancy, firmness, that must necessarily appear in the form of proof, demonstration, or works. And therefore, through the act of translation, and in answer to the 21st question, it can now be represented that the five corporeal senses do not constitute man, but instead that Christian science itself constitutes man. Five corporeal senses are as such mortal beliefs only. Now we're on 488, line 18. What they really are, when spiritually translated out of being apparently five and corporeal, what they are the faculties, perception and comprehension, which mind alone possesses. They are mental endowments, not at the mercy of organization and decomposition. Line 26. And when they are that, then of course they are the real senses of man. They are his soul's senses. And his soul is ceaselessly reproducing them in their perfection as him, as man. Now to experience this. 489, line 1. The less mind there is manifested in matter, the better. In other words, stop thinking matter. Do not think matter. Mortally speaking, be like the unthinking lobster. Line 2, who, because he is unthinking, doesn't think matter at all. In which case, if he loses his claw, the claw grows again. Why? Because what lies at the back of such a phenomenon is the science of life, in which the senses of mind are never lost, because soul is constantly reproducing them. Well, the same thing would then apply to man. If he lost a limb, it would be replaced by the genuine article, as in the case of the lobster's claw. He wouldn't be thinking matter. No mind or life would be manifested in matter. Believing that it is an educated belief, whereby once he lost the limb, he would really be lost. But his mind would be soul, ceaselessly reproducing its own senses or faculties, so that there was no possibility of their being lost. If they should seem to be lost to mortal sense, they would be instantaneously restored by soul. So corporeal sense breaks all the commands of the Mosaic Decalogue, says the text on line 13. Now we know that in the coming Genesis chapter, it's Eve who realized that the serpent is none other than corporeal sense, don't we? And in the Apocalypse chapter, it's the defrauding dragon with his seven heads, seven capitals, and 10 horns that breaks the 10 commandments. Well, let's be so careful then about having 7 synonymous terms for God. Wouldn't we be wise to let them flow interdependently throughout truth's text, and in so doing reveal to us the diversity of ideas in unity that shows them forth as one absolute God? Because the corporeal senses, which would fragment the one into separated concepts, says the text now in 9:24, is the only source of evil or error. This wrong sense of God, man, and the universe is nonsense, want of sense. It has to do with the animal propensity willpower, upon line 3, that would plunder our harmony, our being jointed together interdependently within the one being. Will, therefore, is the opposite of the faculty of soul, of a faculty of soul, line 5. It's a thing of passion and appetites, blind, stubborn, headlong. It's really Lucifer in the original myth, or as manifest in the act of mortal procreation. It falls head first out of heaven. Instead, therefore, let truth and love, line 7, one in identity in soul, be our motive powers. Let love, the very principle of the science of mind, one mind only in Christian Science, hold all things whole, harmonious, unfallable in truth. In that case, we shall not quench the Spirit, on line 19, for this will be the Spirit. We shan't despise prophesyings, because everything that is said or done will now be of the nature of divine revelation. Immortal testimony, the spiritual sense of being, which can be obtained in no other way, will be ushered in. With the passing of material sense in this way, now we're at line 28, 29, the